Hi, friends. Hope everyone is doing well today. Unfortunately, today's going to be the last interview for Selected Pros. We have reached the end of interviews. There are still some phenomenal reading series coming out soon, but after that, the pot is kicking the bucket. It's been a lot of fun. I've met some great people because of this show, not only on Twitter and Patreon, but also in real, fleshy material existence. So thank you for the support over the last year and a half. I really appreciate it. And I hope that you've read some works that you never would have read otherwise and learned a thing or two about the craft of fiction writing along the way. Special shout out to people who supported me on Patreon. Incredibly generous of you to donate money to a project like this, and I greatly appreciate that. You know, I think down the line the podcast will come back in a new form, just kind of more aligned with my evolving personal interests, and you know, I don't know when, don't really have a timeline on that, but I have a pretty specific idea, and if that's the case, I'll be sure to let you all know. Today's guest, our last fiction writer, is Marlo Granados. Marlo is a writer and a filmmaker, and her debut novel titled Happy Hour came out near the end of last year, last September, I believe. Sheila Hetty says, Marlo Granados writes with a delicious joy and confidence. She conveys frivolity without being frivolous and describes the adventures and degradations of the lives of her characters with an intelligent distance and effervescence that is such a pleasure to read. I had a lot of fun with this book and with speaking with Marlo. Links to her book, as always, is in the description. And yeah, thanks again. Enjoy the talk.
Morning.
Yeah. How's it going?
Good. My cats might like run around. They tend to do that. Just
for all the good.
You know.
All good. My dog is actually doing the exact same thing, so we're fine.
I don't know how they get like this. They sleep like 24, like literally like so much all the other times. But when I have to be on like a call or something, they're like, okay, I'm up, I'm running around.
Yeah. They just want your attention, your full attention. But well, hey, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I actually haven't like done I haven't been on a Zoom on a Saturday in a while, like maybe ever.
Yeah.
But I guess I had like a nice little break, like where I haven't been doing interviews. So like, it's like a little refresher.
Yeah. I was super intrigued by the description of your book, and yeah, I guess I just kind of want to know, like, I found it fascinating that you wrote Happy Hour, what, when you were like 22?
I started writing it when I was 22. Yeah.
No, I kind of love to hear about like the genesis of the book, like when you started, when you knew this was like something that was going to be a novel. Cause I mean, I think a lot of us are like, and it's fun too. Like you've made something that a lot of people try to do interesting. And so I'm wondering when you realized that like your story about New York was interesting enough to turn into a novel.
Where should we start in this?
Yeah, wherever you want. I don't know.
So
all the way at the beginning.
I started writing it like really like right when I just turned 22. I was living in London, like kind of like I had just gotten back from New York. I used to spend like kind of a few months in New York, like a year. And I went to I was at Goldsmiths in London for my creative writing BA. And you know, like there was just like, I was starting to get like really into just reading. I've always really been into old movies. And I started like reading a little bit more about, you know, the golden age of Hollywood. I was reading a lot more of like stories, you know, the whole thing I like always like to say is that like the book is really influenced by Gentlemen Prefer Blondes by Anita Loos. That's a book that was written in like 1925. And You know, I read it and I was like, oh, like, wouldn't it be so interesting if, you know, like you could kind of transpose the politics of this novel, like the lifestyle of like what a flapper was in the 20s. Like, can that kind of lifestyle and kind of currency still exist like now? Like, how would that work? Like, I think that a lot of the times the stakes would be much lower in a way, you know. But like, would you still be able to move freely in the world? So that was kind of like what I was thinking about. But I mainly wanted to, I always talk about this as kind of, it was very much that I had this voice that I had thought of. And it felt so strong and it felt so particular that I was like, oh, like I feel like this would make sense, like as the like how to build a story around this voice, because it seems like something that would be really you know, like A, like it fun and interesting for me to write, because you know, it, as much as you read it, like, and it's fun to read, but like writing it was so fun because you also had a way to kind of map out a certain kind of like dialect. That's really like what makes the book, I think, you know, quite different from a like contemporary fiction right now as well, because it was so specific in this kind of voice that felt timeless. Like, didn't have like this kind of you know, I hate slang. I hate like even like talking about like using like weird like words that I get so like icked out by it. So
You
yeah,
mean just in the text or just in general?
I guess in general, like I don't know. I find it you know, like I don't use too much like slang in my day-to-day life. Like, I think that it's, you know, I'm very proper sometimes, I think. But even just reading it, I get so like embarrassed or something. And so yeah, I didn't want anything like that. Like, I didn't want to like talk too much about like texting or like kind of shorthand, and like that to me was like my worst nightmare. So really I wanted to write the book around this voice, and it kind of started becoming a situation where at first, you know, I wrote like a monologue. I was like, I'm gonna write this monologue like as though this person is presenting herself to someone who's like that she's just met. Like, how would this person like perform herself to someone else? Because that's really so much about Issa, is she really wants to control how people see her all the time. And like how to do that, and what kind of facts you'd give and what you would hide. Really, like what you keep out like says just as much as what she's telling you. So it's really up to the person who's meeting this person to really have their own understanding and reading of this person. Like, do I take all the information she's giving me at face value, or am I able to be like, is this person trying to like trick me? Like, what is this? Like, is she like kind of sly? Like, what is this game? And so yeah, and I guess I just started getting kind of writing in frenzies. Like, I would do, because it was like obviously like, because Gentlemen Prefer Blondes is in diary form, so I was like, oh, that's a great like way to like map out this voice, or at least to like put it in sections. Like, I didn't use anything from the monologue that I originally wrote in the novel. Like, it was really important though to like be able to do it so that you could kind of gain like a sense of yeah, just exactly like how she would say something and why she would say it. And so much about the book is about performance, like how to perform a personality, how to perform charm. And you know, like I was so interested in figuring that out, like how that would work when you're reading someone's diary. Like, how would you be like really like brought in by their like you know, like sense of self and kind of their magnetism.
And I guess it
And
also sort of gets into memory too, like, or at least her self-awareness of how she's deciding to remember the events of her own life, and
Oh,
will it be
absolutely.
read one day by somebody else, and
Yeah, I mean, I think that the whole thing, it was funny because like, you know, originally when we put the book out, like a lot of publishers were like, well, you know, like the diary is kind of weird. Like, can we not just like change it? Like, this was like before, like, you know, can't we just change it into like first person? So it's like closer because there's like seems like there's like a distance. And I'm like, well, that distance is like is manufactured by her. Mm-hmm. Like she doesn't want you close. Like that's the whole point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you know, you have this kind of thing where you're the memory thing is interesting because it's like also having to write something that feels like it just happened. But like she's still recalling it like a few days later. And like how does someone who has gone out a few days before and probably like may have done something like kind of embarrassing or bad, like how would that person later recount that story in a way that would kind of make them seem better?
Mm-hmm.
Like they really were like the winners here instead of like being, you know, like maybe they were like out of hand or something.
Mm-hmm. And maybe even sometimes it's subconscious, like they're accidentally yeah. making themselves look better because they don't want to admit to themselves that they've erred.
Yeah, absolutely. Like that's yeah. there's like so many tricks about like I think that was kind of what interested me with the diary, because it was also like, you know, it was also like the idea that like even if it like without like the idea that like later on maybe she becomes a writer or blah blah blah, these things, I think the whole thing is that she's interested in like what she leaves behind. And like, if this is the only remnant in like this, mm-hmm. like small scale story, let's say, like, you know, who's going to fight with her retelling of it? Like, you know, like this is such a small sliver of the world. Like it doesn't really matter. Like, so at the end of the day, like she's creating this narrative that, is just what people are going to remember of her.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like really a large part, I think, in terms of like, you know, like also like these are young women, they don't have that much, you know, power really. So like that was kind of also like an exercise in like in and having some sort of power and in kind of gaining some sort of upper hand that is totally manufactured by these like 21-year-old characters.
Mm-hmm. And what you said too earlier is like this idea of gamification, like it does feel like they come into New York City and they do very much treat it like a game that requires a certain level of skill and slyness, and like not only in the, and I do want to talk about how you cultivated the voice in it because I think it's really interesting, but the idea of kind of their almost detached view of things in a way that like we're going to play this game not only for economic and power reasons, like we want to be respected, we want to pay rent, we want to like get the most out of the summer, but like it is sort of viewed in this mysterious light of like, there is a game, there are achievements that can be won, and we're going to like go out and find them. Mm-hmm. Was that fun to write? Cause there's so many interesting situations that they find themselves in.
Right. I mean, I think that what the whole, there's like a scene early on where Issa is invited to this like private like room where there's like a movie star, and like he says like, oh, it's like an experiment for New York. It's not, you know, the other way around. And I think that was kind of the whole thing. It's less that like the city changes these girls. It's very much like they're just trying to like throw their weight against a city and like see what will happen. And I think that was also like a really key difference in like, I think what a lot of New York narratives were like, because, you know, like you have obviously like you have like those like girls who, you know, want to like make something of themselves. They come to New York and they like, you know, come from nowhere and, you know, that they like all of a sudden get like hardened to the city. But like these girls in a way, like Issa has already been like a little like in Europe and like going around like
right she's like flown and, like, out, you know, and out to places.
Yeah, and like Gala is very much just like a she's just like hard-headed and kind of like and stubborn, and she doesn't really like understand like a lot of like New York bullshit. So so like the combination of that is just like funny in itself, because like Issa's just like, I've been places, I know, like there's more to life than just this like little New York block or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think that was just like a really fun, it was fun to write. I think it was also just like, I wanted the book to seem like, you know, those kinds of, when you're like in like one of those, like, I don't know what you call them, like those houses, like those, like not haunted houses, but like, you know,
like a fun house.
Yeah, sure, like a fun house. And you like open each door and it's like, it's so different in each one, and you kind of are, you're still the same throughout the whole house, but you're like seeing these like different environments and meeting different people and like really like getting to know like a certain kind of New York. And that's what I wanted it to read like. That was, and you know, like I'd always wanted it. You know, I know people are always like, there's nothing that really happens in this book. Like, for me, it was more like, oh, well, like, when you live that kind of lifestyle, like every night something's happening, mm-hmm. like actually happening, like fun.
Yeah, definitely.
There's not like this like overarching like theme or plot that we have to like, feed into. It's mm-hmm. more just like these girls. And I also really wanted them to be like, I always talk about like the idea of like a picaresque, like, you know, like when you're moving like horizontal in the world, it's instead of vertically, like, it's like you're going, you're like traversing in a way. And yeah. And they're kind of like these, like, Issa's like not really trustworthy. She's really wily, like whatever, she's going to go around. And that was, it's for me, like, I was more just like, so invested in writing this. I wasn't even like thinking about anything else. Like, also I was doing it for school too. Like, I was like,
oh, interesting.
I was like submitting these things for school, and people were like, this is kind of weird.
Well, I think that's what makes it different though than a lot of like young person goes to New York City narratives, that it is weird. There's like this, there's like an element of weirdness in the characters and that they meet and the absurdness of it that actually I think captures New York better than the typical like cynical mm-hmm. living in Bushwick, like, oh, here's a creepy rich guy and I'm so miserable but I need the money, like, whatever. There's an absurdity to like all these characters that mm-hmm. I actually feel like is more like the people that I've met in New York, where there's just such an odd cast of characters and you didn't pick archetypes, I guess. So I think weird is a good description in a positive
yeah
way.
I mean, I think that like the funniest thing and what I always tell people, because everyone's always like, oh, did you base it on your life or whatever? And I'm always like, I always like put in all these like Easter eggs in there for people who like are in the know of something. And it doesn't even matter what it is. But, like, if you're in the know, you know, like you'll at least pick up on one of these Easter eggs. And I think that like the funniest thing, like kind of, you know, that I've lived like lives after like writing this novel, like during the whole saga of its publication, and like the more I think about it, the more I look back at it, I think it's like actually quite like it is like an odd funny thing to have like risen to the top, because I had put so many like odd like funny little like idiosyncrasies and like weird parts where you're like, wait, did that actually just happen? Like, what is happening? And I think that like one of the biggest parts, which is interesting to me, that people always say that they loved, is the Hamptons section, because that to me was like my gothic like fairy tale in the 75% into the book. Like, it was like this weird like pause where we're just like transported and you're kind of like, it's like there's a bit of like a weird like eeriness to it that's mm-hmm. That all of a sudden you're like, wait, like, I am confused. I walked into like a very weird room. And yeah, I think that was kind of like also like the I think a mischief of my age as well, like writing it, being like, like people won't even know what hit them like when they're reading this. And I'll be honest, like when I would send it when I was like 22 or whatever, and I was in university, I was like maybe my second year, I started submitting it, and then I had to do like my workshops, and people were like, this is like American Psycho or something. They were like they were so, they had not like really like understood reading this kind of very stylized voice, like, so they didn't understand like the different like the switch in registers or all these things, because yeah, like we're like, you know, we're their BA, like you're getting taught like how to like write quote unquote mm-hmm. And so they were like, well, this word seems out of place. And I'm like, well, it's like totally different. So I was already kind of like moving into this like very, I was like, I had my own way of thinking about stuff. And I was like, well, this is what I am going to do. And it doesn't really matter what you guys are doing.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great attitude to have, but also when you're writing from like this unreliable first person perspective and it's a diary, who's to say words being in the wrong place as an intent, like you're given a certain level of freedom, I think, that you're not, if you're writing a traditional third person narrative.
Yeah. And it's funny, cause like, I think about it now and I'm like, or like I've talked to like other writers and if I've interviewed them too, like when they're writing like third person and I'm like, but like through different sometimes it's like third person omniscient, like through a bunch of different people. And I'm like, like, that's so complicated and weird. Like, that's very, I like can't even imagine, but yeah, I guess it's like, everyone has different strengths.
True. I'm kind of with you. I prefer the first for a variety of reasons. Do you think you could do a narrative where there's like more than just a couple first person narrators and everyone has different voices?
I mean, it's really hard to say. Like, I think that that would be interesting. I think that like I writing in this character, like I spent so long in her head. And then after when I finished the manuscript, when I was about like 25, I felt so bereft. I was like, there's no longer this like weird voice in my head anymore where like, cause everything I heard a lot of the time, like during those years, I would switch it around. I would like think about it. Like how would, who would say this? Like what would, like, how would this sound from someone else's mouth? Like this kind of thing. And afterwards I was like, oh, I don't do that anymore. That was so many years of my life. And then I always say that afterwards I had to like, kind of like squeeze out that style because I was so stuck in Issa's voice that I had to like start to really like go back to the basics and very like bare. And I look back at that stuff, I'm like, this is not good. But because you had to just like, you had to like cleanse the system in a way, one way or another, like where like you no longer are under that style or under that like book anymore. And
And Issa's filtering everything that you experience.
Totally. And I think that like it was just all of this was like a necessary journey into like how to, you know, like leave the voice, etc. And I think that like my writing's better for it now to have those blank years of like having been like writing like whatever, like 40,000 words of something that was like, you know, it didn't have that, it didn't like hit, you know, it wasn't like hitting. And I was like, I knew it. And I was just like, oh, I'm just going to try to do this anyways. But it was important to just get it out.
Yeah. I can imagine like you've got to exercise Issa from yourself. Before we like talk about other stuff though, I'm interested in like cultivating the voice because it is so strong. And I was kind of struggling to like describe it, but you kind of did earlier. I mean, it pops, it's almost like, you're right that it isn't like this modern dialect and it's almost like jazz agey in a way. It's just, And so I find it like to be, as we discussed earlier, a very unique voice, especially for like contemporary New York fiction. But I'm wondering where it comes from. Like, how did you develop that voice over time? And just kind of origin story of the voice.
I mean, it was one of those things where I think that I always joked originally that Issa was like me after three drinks. It was like, especially at like that age, especially when I'm like maybe when I was 20 or something. And so it was kind of like leaning on that, but also thinking about the lineage of where this voice came from and thinking about the, you know, hold on one second. I like have three beverages here. I was thinking about the lineage of, you know, heroines, like screwball heroines in, you know, like 1930s films. And also like, I was reading a lot of memoirs of like society women, like cafe society women and like really glamorous characters. And they always, like a lot of the really good ones come from really like odd circumstances. You're like, and I really like the idea of this like old school, you know, the word is like adventurous, where they rise ranks with by unscrupulous means. And that was something I just wanted to like bring back. But like, it's funny because like people ask me questions about like nostalgia or whatever, but I'm not very interested in like going back, you know. I'm much more interested in like bringing things forward and like how that would work and would it work or would it seem like, you know, costumey or something. And so like, at the end of the day though, I had a lot of friends, like me especially, like I grew up in Toronto. I moved to London when I was like 18, And I was like going around, and like that also did something to the way that I spoke and the kinds of things I was interested in, et cetera. And, you know, like also like I grew up with my grandparents. My grandmother is like she's a hilarious, eccentric kind of woman. And she like was always like taught how to like, she was like in, I don't know what you call it, like enunciation class, like whatever. Yeah. This kind of thing. So she always enunciates like everything so strongly. And, you know, just the way that, and I grew up with women who were all had this like really particular sense of like mispronouncing things in a funny like way to make themselves seem like more like, I don't know, like to have their own little like quirk about them, I guess. So it just kind of felt very natural to have this kind of voice, or like at least develop it. That was at least like the beginning parts of it. And then I guess with Issa, it was mainly that I wanted there to be a very big difference between like being like witty and like what her voice is, because I'm not interested in like wit mm-hmm. for the sake of itself, because I do think, and I've read like, you know, I've read a lot of like read different writers over the course of the years that like are witty, but like they have no warmth to them. And that was something that I was very aware of. I think it's very easy to have observations that are at arm's length, that are also cruel, and like mm-hmm. they don't really have that kind of understanding nature. So like the voice also had to be, you know, she's not always going to be like super cutting about everything. Like I think that was like a real part that I wanted to include, that she's actually like, you know, at the end of the day, she's like a nice girl. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And even these sort of not despicable, but almost sort of cliche characters that she's bumping up against in society, she gives a level of grace that you're completely correct. Absolutely. Like what I was saying earlier, where just, you know, there's like a very conventional way to treat characters like that in fiction. And it's exactly like you're saying, like, you know, arm's length, sardonic sort of biting humor about it. And she's almost just like, I am in this to live the experience.
Yeah. And I think that like that also kind of like she understands why people do the things that they do. I think that she also has to be like that because of what she does. So, mm-hmm. so I think that she's always taking that into account and really trying to be, yeah, exactly. Like have some grace with these people. And that kind of was that was something that I think that was so key to her as a character that I do think like sets her apart from anything else. I think that like trying to be like super clever is sometimes a trap, and I wanted there to be parts where you're like, okay, like she you can tell when she's kind of like self-satisfied or like smug mm-hmm. about herself, when she's like like she has these little like lines, but then after like it kind of like rounds out in a way. And that was just an important like facet to, I think, include, because also like, you want to know that like these are like young women. And I think that young women often do that. They sometimes throw out a really like pithy line, and then, but there is this like softness cutting it. And I think that you have to kind of understand that like maybe she's saying this because she's confident in saying this in a kind of like bratty way. But then there's also like this like underlying reason why, or is she mm-hmm. trying to like take back this scene with a bunch of like powerful people? Like what's the like that motivation? Yeah.
It's so funny. I have a friend, we used the word glamorous earlier, and that sort of like the story is like caked in glamour in a way that I and you mentioned your sort of like research into society women and mm-hmm. stuff, which I'm very interested about. I was just reading Issa, like I have a friend who lives in the Upper East Side who reminds me so much in terms of like voice. So I can't get Bridget, if she's listening, out of my head. But I'm super interested in that sort of like the research you did, maybe some of the interesting characters that not necessarily that Issa was like based off of or anything, but people or authors from maybe a more glamorous time that you've brought forward. You know, if there's any interesting characters that stuck out to you or like any stories you want to share from that research.
I've always really liked, so me and my friend, I have one of my best friends, we're like really into Truman Capote's swans. So like that was like the group of women he called like his like closest friends that he later like betrays in of course like in fiction. But you know, like we read a lot about like those, I've read a lot about the memoirs from those women. Like Slim Keith is one of them who, you know, like as a woman, like she doesn't have like a household like name recognition, but of course, like she like discovered Lauren Bacall. Like she was married to Howard Hawks, and you know, she was very like pivotal in a lot of these, like in this kind of background way. And like Howard Hawks, like the Hawksian woman was like based on Slim Keith. And you know, like this kind of that kind of those real life muses that like interests me in terms of like how that has reverberated in our culture now, like the fact that now that's like a literal like film archetype, like we name it. So Slim Keith was kind of like something, someone that I was interested in just as like a, even though like actually like how she was very different, is very different from let's say like these other girls. It was just a kind of an example of her kind of significance that these kinds of women have. And you know, also like with let's say like, you know, I love Truman Capote, obviously. Like Breakfast in Tiffany's is like a really like big text for me, like just even growing up, and obviously the film. You know, I've read like Eartha Kitt's memoir. There's this really interesting story by Anita, it's published by like Harvard University Press, and it's called American Cocktail, and it's a memoir that was found in between like sheets of like Nella Larsen stuff like in an archive somewhere. And I forget who actually published it, like the editor, but anyway, so this woman was like this like mixed race woman who like was living in like the 20s and 30s, and she was drawn by Man Ray, she was, you know, like very international, and she was working with all these different people. And it was just interesting, like obviously reading like her tell it, because also there's this like real blind spot for like, you know, like any sort of like racial like injustices that she was like privy to, or like that she was being excluded from because like people thought she was just tanned or something, like these kind of like funny stories that are like, you're kind of like, oh, like you're kind of, you're not really like accepting that you're like your place, like that you're like significance in this like historical world, but like okay, sure. But so I don't know, I was just really, and I read like a lot of Jean Reese as well. I always think that like Jean Reese is actually a lot funnier than people give her credit for.
Interesting. And
go ahead.
I would love to hear more about that. Her humor. I mean, I guess it's been a while, but like, I'm thinking of like Wide Sargasso Sea, and I guess I wouldn't have remembered it from, oh, I liked it a lot, but I wouldn't have remembered it from a humor perspective. So I'd love to hear more about that.
What's the other one? Like something Mr. McKenzie. I think that she just like has this like certain way of like thinking her, like having her characters be like really go off the deep end, but like the characters know that it's like kind of silly too. Like I think, and there's this kind of it's like has this rinse of lightness to a lot of the situations.
Yeah, if they're self-aware, it's pretty playful in a way.
They're like really like characters. Yeah, or like you know, it's always like being like, oh, you're being like such an ugly sack or something. So I think that like there is like a humor in that. But I also like obviously with all those like books and memoirs and stuff, I was really like watching. I watched I used to have like a running list of films that I watched, and I can't remember them specifically anymore because a lot of those films from that time period follow like similar plots. But I was watching, like, I watch like so many films about like divorces or like the screwball comedies and all like the classic films. You can find a lot of these films actually on like weird Russian websites, which
is interesting.
Weird. Yeah.
You don't have to buy Criterion.
Oh, do you think these movies are on Criterion? Absolutely not. Yeah. Some of them are not good.
So. Okay. Interesting. Weird Russian websites. All right.
The Russian are really interested in, like, you know, keeping up the American film, even the bad ones.
Yeah. You know, so now, and I'm not sure, like, are you still in New York?
I'm not in New York. I'm in Toronto right now.
Okay. Do you live in both places or you're in Toronto for good?
I have had my apartment in Toronto since 2016.
Okay.
Like, pretty, like, solidly. Like, I don't, I'm having, like, a... Like whenever I've been to New York in the last year, it's been like so much work. Like, and I actually like can't, I feel like so associated with like the press stuff I had to do that like I like during the periods of time when I was in New York, I would just like be in a hotel, my hotel, like being like, I don't want to leave today. Like, I don't want to go anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that surprisingly I've been feeling like that without the press. So you're in a good spot. But I guess, you know, I'm interested too in like how the sort of like socialite game per se, you know, has changed in recent times. Like, do you keep up, like, for example, I was thinking a lot about Anna Sorokin. How do I say her name? She was like the
Anna Delvey.
Oh, what was it?
Anna Delvey?
I think so.
Yeah.
They made a documentary about her recently. And mm-hmm. So she was kind of like, a very extreme version of like a socialite who kind of, from what I understand, like allegedly frauded her way through blah, blah, blah. But I'm interested in like, maybe what, I don't know. Has the game changed?
I guess like what is like in terms of like being like a party girl or like a like socialite is a bit different. What do you?
Well, yeah, like, I don't even know, do the certain, like, socialites that you had researched in the past or that you think of, like, do they really still exist?
Yeah, they definitely exist. Like, there's definitely, like, this, a certain, like, breed of, like, very rich people who are just around all the time.
Like the housewives of Beverly Hills or something?
No, not even that. Like, I think that, like, it's very clear, like, if you're, like, in Europe or something, like, it's very different, like, because also in Europe, it's very much like just like really old money, like mm-hmm. really old money. Like American new money is very different. Like I spent enough time in London to know that like there's just, and it's all these people that I, you know, have met or whatever. It's always people who have like maybe 300 followers on Instagram and on a private account. And like it's like you have no access to these people are like very under the radar. But I guess like the difference now is like that, yeah, there's like this whole new like thing of like more like social media people, which is right. Like actually the opposite of glamour. It's actually terrible, but yeah, I don't know. I think that like this just it's now a little bit more, I just like, don't think it's like very, obviously it's not, it's like not fun. I'm even thinking about like when I was like going out like pre Instagram boom, et cetera. Like it was so much more fun. Like mm-hmm. It was just like, if you had a camera, it was like that one of those shitty like digital cameras or maybe like film. Mm-hmm. But now it's just too much. And also like with the pandemic stuff, it's a little bit like, who knows what's going on anymore.
Yeah, last night we went to a burlesque show in New York, and this table next to us, every single person was just on their phone throughout dinner. And I was like, how are you?
Were they like filming the burlesque?
No, they were texting and like, this wouldn't have been like that back in the day.
Oh my God. You know, I really think that like one of the things I want back, I feel, is like a real like dinner and a show situation.
That's like, what it was. Dinner-
yeah, like I think that needs to come back. I think that's like a really nice like little a fun thing, a fun activity. And like all the films, there was just always like no matter what, there was always a showgirl involved.
Yeah.
Always one of the main characters. She's always, then she has her number, and then all her suitors are in the at the different tables. Mm-hmm. We need to bring it back. I think that's a really important, important ingredient.
No, I completely agree. I think it'll come back. You know, we're getting there. But yeah, so I also wanted to talk to you just about, I guess, not so much voice, because we've done that, but like, when did you know your book was finished? Because it's interesting, like, sort of, I don't want to call it plotless, because it isn't. Like you said, if you are living that kind of life, every chapter is a plot, every story is a plot. So, but how did you know kind of like on what note to end it, to end their story?
Right. Well, it was kind of convenient because obviously like it's set over the course of a summer. So
yeah, so they have the timeline.
I feel like the timeline was always going to be kind of like September-ish.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I think that for me, I had actually mapped out the novel like pretty early. Because it was all diary entries, I knew that there were certain places they had to get to. Like I always knew Issa was going to go to the Hamptons. I knew that there would be kind of like a dust up between Issa and Gala.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that there were like all these different things that were going to happen. I think it was just like trying to figure out how they would get there. And when kind of like, when you know something's done, I mean, I'm very much the kind of writer that's like, that's it. Like, I literally cannot do it anymore. I'm sick and tired of looking at it. Just like, take it away for like a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And basically from that point, you're just kind of like I've been with my agent for like 8 years or something. So I just was like, sent it to her and I was like, that's it. Like, just look at it. And you know, like she like would read it, she didn't have notes. And then you kind of go through that process of like, okay, like where do you need to bulk up? Because also like I'm super, sometimes in my fiction, like I know there's like certain parts where I'm like going to be lazy in writing. And like, that's at that point, I'm not going to work very hard on those parts. But like when I've come back, when I like have time and space in between and I can like come back to it, I have more time to devote. Like, it's funny because like every editor I've ever had, they're like, yeah, like you're pretty funny about like when we do edits because you don't really fight. You're just kind of like, I know I was lazy then. I'll just like start work on
very that, easy to work know. With.
Yeah, like I don't really care. Like I feel like some people are really precious. Like, I don't know. I was just like, okay. Like,
yeah.
I was just like signing off on their corrections. I was like, whatever. Like
that's so good to hear. People put a lot of pressure on themselves, like have a perfectly edited manuscript before they send it out to their agent or whatever. And it's just like, you know.
Oh my God, no. Like yeah, I'm always like, I like don't know how to use commas properly. Like, I don't know how to do, like, I truly don't know. So like at the end of the day, it was just very much like, okay, the main idea is here. Like, let's just like look at it, see where we can improve. Like, I'm gonna need like a few months in between like each mm-hmm. edit to like A, like absorb the feedback, because that's a whole other thing. I'm like always trying to absorb like different each stage so that I have like a little bit more space. And then yeah, I mean, but like the whole publishing process, like I always talk about it, was like very difficult. So like at the end of the day, I was like, I always talk about like there was like a few years where I just was like, I'm not going to be a writer. I don't really care. Like, I've given up. I don't really care. Like, we'll just like, we've shelved the book. It doesn't matter. I'm on to something else. Like,
I hate to interrupt, but I saw like a Q&A with you on some magazine, like some reader sent you a question and it was like, I want to be a writer.
Oh, right. My advice.
You were like, you're like, most people wouldn't say this, but I would say it's really not worth it. You're like, it's a lot of work and it's not very glamorous. And I thought that was terrible. Funny. Yeah.
No, I still think that like every day, my friends are like, I actually like my friends every day. Cause I don't have that many writer friends, but like, so all day they're like, yesterday I was on the phone with my friend. I called him while he was at work and he was like, how much writing do you have to do? I can tell you have to do a lot. Like, he's like, what? I think that like, I've never really had a good personality for it. So it's like an illness.
Yeah, for sure. I will say though, one of the reasons, like one of the many things I respect about you is that I feel like the element of like what we were talking about earlier, like grace and compassion for your characters, but also I just feel like something that's missing a lot of the time, at least in the stuff that I end up reading, not for the podcast, but like in life, you know, the element of like joy is kind of missing. Mm-hmm. And
right,
not that like joy and misery, one's better than the other necessarily, but it's like if everything is kind of coming from like a cruel or tortured or droll, dry place, it just kind of gets exhausting. And so when you read an author that you can tell like enjoyed the work, right, at least you there was joy on the page, it's refreshing. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, I'm also like equally extroverted and sometimes feel like it's torture. And so it's just, it's interesting to hear, like, you know, it's good to know that not all writers are the same, and people can write from a place of like positivity, which is a struggle, I think, for a lot of people, because I think it's easier to be critical.
Right. I think that, like, I mean, I guess my whole thing is that, like, I struggled with a lot of the portrayals of young women over the past, like, you know, like 7 years or whatever, only because, like, I was like, the whole, every time I was just like, but I've had so much fun. Like, I don't know. Like, what do you, like, I get
it. Come after you for that attitude? Or like, are they like, what do you mean you had fun? Are they kind of
indignant about it? Well, I guess that was kind of like, obviously the struggles of publishing the book in the first place was that people were really like, well, like nothing really happens. Like nothing bad happens to these girls. Like, well, what are we supposed to like hang on to? Or like, I'm like, what do you mean? Like, it's just like, sometimes people just, I think it's just like important also to know that like people deal with like that kind of stuff differently. And like, I think that, you know, like my thing about the novel is that like, I'm also like the novel and myself, like I'm not a very sentimental person. And I also really have a weird thing about like wallowing. I don't do it. Like, I just can't do it. It feels like so indulgent. And like, I think that that kind of, like, I do that for my characters too. Like they just like, you know, and I always describe them as like little sharks, and they're like,
they're go-getters. They just like,
yeah, they just like move forward. They're like, okay, whatever, like this bad thing happened, but like, let's keep it going. Yeah. Because I also just think that like life doesn't stop like when something bad happens. Like, so, you know, I think that like, that was something that I wanted to be very clear about. And I always was really like that about, just like the texts that I always had to read. Like, it was always like we had to like punish like young women for like seeking whatever they liked or whatever they wanted to do. There's always some sort of like threat of like sexual violence or like pregnancy or like we have to have an abortion or like blah blah blah, all these things. And I'm just like, yeah, I guess, like, yeah, that does happen, but like, and it, like, you know, like of course that stuff like that's happened to me, but like it's also just like, okay, but again, if you're committed to a certain type of lifestyle, like, and you're like interested in like pursuing a night of like having fun and going out, and like that's kind of like your game of like every single day is like a new possibility of like meeting someone, maybe that person will like be the answer to like whatever, like that's a much more, it's just like a joyful attitude to have. It's also very hopeful. And I think that like with, you know, to like balance out the kind of, balancing out like all those kinds of, that kind of literature, it's also, you know, like we have to also remind ourselves like what we live for, you know, like it's like we live for like pleasures and fun and beauty and all these things. Like, I don't think that's like less serious than the other thing, but I do think that as like a whole, we always think that like these things, like for, we have to have, a, you know, deeper narrative or whatever to be taken seriously. And I think that's a really big mistake. And I was just listening to a, was I listening to or did I read it? Sometimes I get confused. But like Rebecca Solnit. Yeah, Rebecca Solnit was talking about her newest book, Orwell's Flowers. And she was talking about like a lot of the times, you know, like the left always thinks that like when we are like pursuing pleasure and beauty, like that is a kind of a it's indulgent, it's like people are suffering, like whatever. But the whole, her whole angle on it was so interesting because she used the word fortifying, like these things like fortify us to like to face the world in like a in a way that doesn't like burn us out, like, and that's also important. And yeah, I think that like the whole, and that's kind of like what I think my themes, my general themes always will be, is like to the pursuit of pleasure and joy and that kind of beauty. And not that I think that people reading the book should think that what I find is beautiful, but like, I think that they should always like try to find out what that is for themselves. And that's kind of like the whole thing. I'm not trying to like, be like, oh, like everyone should be going out and everything should be doing. It's very much about like a more of like a philosophy of living, as opposed to like, you have to be like a 21-year-old party girl in order to like, you know, have so much fun. How dare you if you're not.
Yeah. But I mean, it's also, it adds a new diverse perspective to this type of fiction, which is not like covered in like what you were saying, the threat of sexual violence or pain. I mean, there are other perspectives and and this is one of them. I mean, did you ever feel any sort of like pressure commercially or anything where you like, maybe I, because you know, I'm thinking about that and I didn't read it, but that article that everybody was talking about in the New Yorker about the trauma plot,
right?
I can only know what it was about based on what other people say, but it's sort of like, yeah, like trauma has sort of become like this commercialized plot device that's used in every story about suffering. And so did you kind of feel any, did you ever feel like, oh, maybe I need to get sucked into the trauma plot?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, like, definitely when the first, when we went, we took the book out the first time in 2017 and no one wanted it, like, that was definitely, I was like, huh, interesting. Maybe my whole thesis was wrong here. No, but I like knew that already. I knew that like from a very young age. I was like, oh, okay, like every book that they make you read in English class, whatever, like is all like that anyways,
right?
For the most part. It's the majority of the canon, really, especially like, and you know, like in university texts and blah, blah, blah. So
you start with the yellow wallpaper every semester and you go from there.
It's, so it's the whole thing where I'm like, I already knew that I was going to be up against a difficult thing. And that was kind of what was interesting about like the original like rejection letters. I remember being like, people being like everything that they said, what was wrong with it was the reason why I wrote it. So I was like, okay, well, like they just don't get it. They don't.
That's really validation, I would think, on your, you'd probably feel validated.
In a way.
Yeah.
I definitely was like, well, I guess I just wasted that whole time. It doesn't really matter. So I mean, like, well, I guess, like, and to be honest, like, even when we were trying to publish it, which we were trying to sell the rights to this, to Happy Hour, like, after it had already been, like, acquired in Canada, it was already difficult still. Like, it was, no one wanted it still, except for, you know, like a few, and then one of it was Verso, which was like, I was like, oh cool, like they get it, like that makes sense to me that they would understand it. So yeah, I mean, I obviously think that it was like a bit of like a runaway, it was like definitely the I don't know what's that word, it's like not like a runaway hit, like really, like not like that, I would never call it that, but like it was kind of like a like the surprise debut, I guess, in a way that I think that there were like not that many like high expectations for it, like
And then it was super well received and you did a bunch of,
yeah, I mean, I guess that was what was funny, it was just like all like the big houses said no, and then like, yeah, I got like all the main press, which was like, you know, I know that, I don't think Verso has like cronies or something like forcing them to cover the book. So,
yeah, I don't even want to make you get into the publishing industry. And I kind of know a little bit about the background of publishing this book. And so I know it's a lot and there's a lot of competing interests and stuff. But I do want to know if you're working on anything now, fiction wise.
I mean, I am always testing it stuff out. I'm always trying to do stuff. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's kind of, it's kind of funny because like I've also like, you know, you're supposed to be like, people always ask me to like write also essays, right? And I genuinely like, I'm like, I don't want to, like I really, it's like really like difficult for me to, so sometimes I'm also like not a very good multitasker in with writing, like I have to be like, really focused in on like one thing at a time.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I think for me, like I like also like when people kind of ask me to write something original for like a small little like literary thing, like I usually do, like I'll write like a little like original like fiction that I hadn't published before. I didn't even have before someone asked me to do it. So, but I like doing that. I mean, I don't know. I started getting a lot of DMs recently from readers being like, Marlo, where's the next book? And I'm like, oh my God, they're all like sitting in my request. Like these people are sitting in my request. And it's like all of them being like, Marlo.
You're like, don't look at it. Don't let them know.
I know. I don't want to look at it. I'm like, can someone pick me up from school? Like the readers are bullying me.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, somebody that I didn't know a while back was the one who recommended that I read you, which was cool. Some random person DM'd me and they were like, you got to read her.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah. That's fun. I know. I was like, awesome. So I did.
Yeah. I mean, I like, it was such a fun thing. The most fun thing that I am realizing now though, is that, and I kind of like a publishing thing, but like, because I got, I was with Verso, they let me kind of choose a lot of things like the cover and
oh, the cover is great.
Yeah, one of my best friends did that, like she, I've like known her since high school, so like I think the most fun thing is like having been able to bring like my close friends in on this like journey with me.
Yeah.
And that's kind of fun. Like one of my other friends like did my author's photo for the book, and like it's just been like a funny little like group thing that's like happened to my friendship circle. They've been like, okay Marlo, like, because for so many years they were like, I know you're writing a book, that's what you're doing at the cafe all day, like why can't you come meet me for cocktails now, like da 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 da, like, and then they're like, okay fine.
That's great. Now they're probably like, all right, write your next one so that we can do this all again.
No, they're literally like I cannot handle this, like it's like they, I have one of my best friends, I'll put him in like my stories and stuff. And then it's so funny. I've said now that I'm like his secretary because people will message me trying to get in contact with him to like cast him and stuff. And he was like, Marlo, like, I'm not going on your story anymore. Like, I don't want to be on here. I don't like the eyes on me.
did you ask him, were you like, hey, can I put you in my stories? Or did you just start doing it?
Oh, like, I mean, like my Instagram stories.
Oh, I thought you meant fictional stories.
No, I just, no, 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 no. I mean, honestly, like he hasn't even read the full book. Like, I don't think, I have a lot of really good friends that are like, I can't read it because they're with me all the time. And they're like, I just like an over, it's like too much of like a similar energy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, you have like great energy for an author. You know, a lot of the times there's like an author energy that, you know, you see a lot of an MFA programs or in Brooklyn or whatever, but I'm like, right. I identify with you. I feel like we have similar. I'm like, good.
Fun.
I'm good. There's other types of authors that have a very outgoing, fun personality and that we're not all just struggling through this.
No, I mean, I was
as much as really writing difficult. Sucks sometimes.
Yeah, I do. No, definitely. Like I would rather do anything else. I always go to my local coffee shop and I'll just like stand there for 20 minutes talking to the people who work there. And they're like, aren't you supposed to go home and do something with your day? And I'm like, yeah, no, I mean, I remember like being in workshop and like, I connected two of my really good girlfriends that I was in creative writing with. We became like such good friends because I could tell that they were like me, and we're still friends now. And it's just funny. We recall those days with such fondness, but it was also all three of us like smirking at each other and then like laughing and like disrupting the class and being so obnoxious.
That's great. That makes me so happy to know that you all exist. And oh, just a quick question. I like to, do you have like a, like, what's your writing process? I mean, do you work full time or do you have like another job?
Oh my God. I really hate working.
Me too.
I mean, I used to work like full time. I worked like, I was always like my businesswoman. Like I was like I was kind of working for like a luxury, resale fashion company. So, you know, I was kind of doing like a lot of like different things like that. And it was really fun because I, you know, was working on my other talents, which I, you know, have done photography in the past, and I did some styling and blah, blah, blah. Like,
I know you've also got a podcast.
Yeah. I mean, very casual. We don't talk about it that much because my friend who I do the podcast with is like, gets so embarrassed. About it. But yeah, so like I used to work like full time, like 5 days a week doing that. And then like, obviously with all this stuff happening, like I had to cut down. And my writing process is literally like, I get nervous for 3 weeks about something. And then like, finally, when like the last week happens, when something's due, I'll like rev into it for like 2 to 3 days. And I have like 2 more days of rest. And then I just do it over and over.
So it's deadlines, You need deadlines for your process.
Yeah. I like deadlines because, otherwise I can't like really get into it. Otherwise I get too, I'm an associative thinker. Mm-hmm. I don't have like an argument often. I just like to like be very like, this reminds me of this, and this reminds me of ancient Greece. And then this, like, so yeah, I like to be able to, be reined in by a deadline.
Mm. Yeah, that's good to know. Me too. I always write things the day before they're due, maybe 2 days, except that they're not done and get edits.
Yeah. The funniest thing, I was on the phone with my friend, film critic, A.S. Hamra. He's a really funny, we have a really funny friendship, but I was saying to him that I had to finish a essay for something. And he was like, well, when's it due? And I was like, oh, like, I don't know, like next week. And he was like, and you're already finished it? What do you mean? And I was like, because I have 2 more things due next week at the same time. And he was like, seems weird that you're already finished it, though. I would never do
that. that's good to know. It's more than just us. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's very much like I feel like it's normal for writers to not really like, go by like a real clock at
Yeah,
that's why I try to co-work with my friends at their houses, and they like, because they work like normal jobs, they like finish at 5 and then they like open up a drink or whatever at like 5:30, and I'm like sitting there like, oh, I can't stop working now, like I'm on till like midnight.
yeah and then the next day and the next, but
yeah, and then you're like I just like to like make myself really manic during the process, and then I feel like the ideas just flow from there.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Well, that is great advice. Get manic, procrastinate, exactly. And get manic. Yeah.
The only way.
Yeah. Well, hey, thank you so much for coming on. It was a genuine pleasure to talk to you.
So you know, fun. Thanks
yeah, for sure. Do you publish short fiction or anything like that? Like,
if you can find it, you can find it.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'd love to. I mean, cause yeah, you've got the novel and I don't know what else, but I'd love to find it, but, and I hope to see something from you in the future and all that. Thank no pressure. I can give you a deadline if you need it, but
No, I'm really I don't know why I'm really in high demand for Valentine's Day writing stuff. So like, I have like deadlines still.
Nice. Oh, good luck. Well, I'll be looking out for some Valentine's Day advice columns. So.
Oh, stunning. Yeah. Yes. In the works, actually. Yes.
Perfect. Perfect.
All right. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Keep in touch. And, you know, I hope to post this in the next week or so. So
perfect.
Awesome. All right. Well, it was great to meet you.
Have a nice Saturday.
Yeah. You too.
Bye. Bye. Mm-hmm.